Welcome to Youth Arts Underground. I am Riley, and I'm joined by my host, or co-host, I don't know. I don't know what the word to use is yet.
I think co-host.
Co-host, then.
Victoria.
I am joined today by two guests. I'm going to let them introduce themselves, because I don't want to script their names.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What a lovely morning.
What is that?
I don't know.
Oh, our names. I'm Lori Ada Jarislow.
I'm Anne Hugh.
This is actually Anne Hugh's interview.
Oh.
I'm like, well, a sidekick.
She's my sidekick.
Yeah.
But I like you.
I like you a lot.
All right. Let's just say that we all like each other.
Okay, yeah.
I'm wrapped in a blankie right now.
Because it was a little arctic in here, which is...
I like how this blanket was here for me.
Well, that's what happens when you have a radio station and air conditioning. It's just one of those things. You know, it's like when you go to a hotel.
It's a blessing with how it's been in LA recently.
I think I'm just a wimp now.
It's been terrible.
Used being a New York expat, now I can't even. I get chilly under 60 degree weather. I suck. I don't know what happened to my fur.
We've LA-ified you. It's an acute disorder.
I love LA. Actually,
it happens. No, I do too. But when I first came here, speaking of weather. I used to like make fun of the people who there was two raindrops and they would say, "It's pouring."
I have always said, I have said this and I will, I think I believe
two
this.
Raindrops.
I will believe this until the day I die. People in LA are water soluble. They dissolve in water. It is just a fact of life.
I mean, because of like the implants, because of the fake breasts?
Maybe. I don't know. It happens to the men. Maybe the men also have implants.
Water soluble.
Anyway, yeah. Tell us about what you do. Tell us about yourself.
I am an actress, writer, singer. I do some comedy stand-up, even though I don't really consider myself a
comedian.
She's
hilarious, by the way.
I have a tremendous respect for comedians, and I have friends that are comedians, stand-up comedians, and very successful, so I will slowly begin to feel like I own those shoes, but not yet.
All right.
I worked as an actress in New York City for very many years, doing a lot of off-Broadway theater, traveled around the country doing regional theater, some musicals, sang for some commercials. The typical, I think, New York City actor resume, a lot of Law and Orders. And then
Law and Order.
A lot of Law and Orders. Yeah, I witnessed a lot of crimes.
Well, so have I.
None of which actually
It comes
were
with
real.
The LA territory.
Did you get paid for it?
I got paid
a couple
for
of
it.
Times.
I did.
It was a strange. I didn't get paid by an agent. I got paid by a very strange man in a red colored coat. Anyway,
I saw him on the street.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's selling flowers now.
Moving
I'm
on.
I'm so confused.
Would you like to tell us about yourself?
I too am an actor and a writer and director and singer and educator.
That's quite a resume.
I teach a lot, yeah. I was in New York too for 27 years.
Oy.
I'm so much older than her.
Well, of course, in LA, where age seems to be the only thing that matters.
Thank you. I love you for that.
I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about LA itself, as in
the
semi-conscious entity that is LA.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm pretty mature for 12, I think. I look like a mature 12.
But I was in New York.
That's
odd.
I pegged you for 11.
Yeah.
I grew up actually in New Jersey, right next to the city. And then I lived in the city for 27 years. What did I do in the city? At that time, I was primarily acting. Now I'm not primarily acting.
She's primarily writing a fantastic musical.
Which we'll get to later.
Which we'll get to. Ooh.
But in New York, I used to do musicals, actually. I mostly did Broadway musicals. And
can you give us any names?
Who day and night must scramble for a living, feed a wife and children. I did that for 5 years.
Ding, ding, ding. All right.
Do you know what it is?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
I do. I did it.
You did?
You can't talk if you don't have a microphone.
There are other people in this room right now.
You're shattering the illusion.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be a fireside chat.
Oldest daughter, Seitel, in Fiddler on the Roof.
I might have
for
seen
years.
That production on Broadway.
Well, I was in it at Lincoln Center, and then And then I toured a lot with Herschel Bernardi. But you guys probably don't even know
him.
I
saw...
Do you? Because he's like...
Chaim Topol do it on Broadway.
I was in that company briefly. You want to hear something crazy about that company?
Do we? Sure.
I don't know if I'm digressing.
We're getting into the gossip pretty quickly here.
Well, my father was an actor and my aunt was an actress and they both happened to be in Fiddler. And my father played... Tevye on Broadway, and my aunt played Yenta, which is one of the funny leads. She's in the Guinness Book of World Records because she played it more than anybody ever. Is that the funniest, craziest thing? But here's the here's the trippy thing. So I was in it when I was younger in 81, and then in 91 they were doing yet another revival. I mean, it probably, if I had braces, it would have paid for my braces because it was like our family's annuity, you know. That's what we did. We did Fiddler. But anyway, so in 91, when Chaim Topol, did somebody say something about Topol?
I saw you saw him that one. Mm. Yeah,
I 90? Was 91. There was one at the Minskoff.
I think I saw that.
I went into that company just to fill in. I was too old to play the daughter at that time. I think Sharon Lawrence was playing the daughter at that time, and but I went into the company and two things: both my aunt and my father were in it. Which was crazy, working with them in a Broadway show. And like in Tradition one night, we were... Do you know the number, Tradition?
Mm-hmm.
We were all holding hands.
Oh, did you cry?
Yeah, is that the sweetest?
Did you have a moment?
Isn't that the sweetest?
I can't I'm say. There's no
out.
Musical
just hearing
for,
about it.
For my so Asian beautiful. Family to be able to do together on stage.
Do you have performers in your family?
Well, I mean, I grew up in Salisbury, Maryland, sort of. I also like to call, with all due respect, one of the armpits of America.
One of the many armpits.
You liked it that much, or it was just...
You know, I was the only Asian girl in my entire graduating class in high school. There were maybe one or two other Asians, but they, like, left. And then there were my cousins, but they were younger than me.
Well, if you're going to get into your... If you want to, you can get a little bit more into your growing up, you know, as a...
As the only Asian in
your section of America.
I just...
What was that like?
Well, I knew I was different, but I kind of like had the mentality that I was white, you know, like everybody else. But until I got to NYU in New York, I think I was like 16 or 17, and noticed that there were all these Asian people around. And then I was like, well, this is so new and weird. There's so many Asians in this town. And then I kind of caught on that I was one of them.
I'm pretty sure there was a movie about this.
You know what I mean? And then I really learned to use my ethnicity as a bonus because I had no problems getting agents and representation and,
really?
And jobs because I stuck out. You know, I had a lot of girlfriends that were blonde hair, blue-eyed, and just like any other blonde hair, blue-eyed girl, and it was a lot harder for them to sort of stick out. Yeah.
So did you go to Tisch?
I went to the Tisch School of the Arts, the Cap 21.
Was it great? Was it great?
It was the hardest I've ever worked in my entire life.
Wow.
Like, I literally, I think I would 2 a.m. I would be writing papers on the toilet in my dorm room, and then getting up at like 7, and then going dance class 3 hours a day, then an hour lunch, and then 3 hours of acting, and then voice and speech, and then I would be in the rehearsal room booking it from 7 to 9 every day.
I know that dance class can be... From what
I'm
I've
not
heard.
A dancer.
I know,
I'm just
but I've heard that.
Level.
I've heard that dance class can be pretty brutal.
You know, I loved it. That was, I think, being an actor in New York was probably my favorite thing.
Yeah, there's nothing else.
It just
like
takes
it.
You out of yourself, and I love it.
But you were asking me how come I eat fried chicken and everything like that.
Yeah,
because I was like, because no, well, one, I have really good genes.
We have to set it up. We have
family.
To set up. Oh, you eat fried chicken?
No, but I think
we
it's
were
funny that we
well,
didn't.
Yeah, we were talking
before
about
the
that after the show. We're
starving.
We're starving.
Everybody
and
Ann
said, we have to go eat fried chicken. And I was quite shocked because she's so lithe and lovely and thin and beautiful.
Like,
and I was like, you eat fried chicken?
Yes, I am.
I said, you
it's
eat
terrible.
Fried chicken? And she
you are
said,
perfect.
I said, I'm Chinese. I eat everything.
And I said, I'm a Jew. I eat everything. But you're skinny and I'm
do you
not.
Eat bacon?
I do.
Yeah.
In fact, my daughter eats bacon constantly.
Is it like a thing where it's like, I'm Jewish, so I'm going to eat as much bacon as possible?
No.
Just to spite my ancestors.
She's actually not Jewish, though, at all.
She's
not. I am.
Your daughter.
She's not, but I am. I actually just met her, my daughter, a year and a half ago. I adopted her. She's a teenager.
Okay, we're getting into so many stories that are interesting, but we have to figure out like one
to go
on.
Focus.
Can we just make this
bad back
about me, please?
Please, yeah, because
it's all about you, isn't it?
No, we're okay. Back in. I'm really interested. Keep.
I just want to know. Okay, you're talking about your stories in college. I just want to know when you decided you wanted to get into acting.
So when I was in kindergarten in Salisbury, Maryland, at Tiny Tots Kindergarten, I was very... No, I'm serious. This is the story.
It was called Tiny Tots?
It was called Tiny Tots. It should have been called Slaughterhouse 5. I was very tiny and cute and little, and a lot of the other students who are, you know, of Caucasian or African descent are physically just a little bit bigger. Some of them should have been in sixth grade, but they were still in kindergarten. That's okay. And I was like physically beat to a pulp pretty much every day at recess.
Oh, no.
Oh, it's okay. I'm tough now.
Are you serious?
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, this is the thing. No, I'm not looking for like a pity party.
Well, it's not that. It's surprising how many schools are so similar to prisons.
Yes. Wow, that was an awesome statement.
Oh, I don't know. It's like, tweet that. Not everything, but it's like you come across that one school where it's like, where are the Russian bear dogs stationed to take care of escaping inmates?
Right. But they say that the things that happen to you in your early, early years sort of shape who you are, and then that is sort of where your drive to do whatever it is you do in your adult life comes from. Mm-hmm. So no one would play with me on the recess, on the playground. And not only that, the kids, we would hear the bell and run out to the playground. I would run as fast as I can and find somewhere to hide.
Oh, oh my God.
No, I'm so serious. Find somewhere to hide. And then everyone else would be playing, and I would sort of create imaginary characters and imaginary friends to play with.
Wow.
And then when the bell rang for everyone to go back to class, I would wait until everyone else ran first, and then I would walk slowly by myself so the teachers could see me so no one could run out and attack me.
Did the teachers protect you?
Oh, I think that school got closed down eventually because the headmistress herself was hitting the children.
Oh, are you kidding?
Are you sure it was called Tiny Tots and not 511 Kinderheim?
That's what I'm talking about. My cousin went there too. Yeah, my cousin, I think it was private. I don't know. But my cousin went there, and she said that the headmistress like smacked her in the face once.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Was her name Trunchbull?
No. No, I don't remember her. I just remember she had black and white hair. With a huge bun on top.
Do you mind me asking?
So she was
what
Frankenstein's
was?
Wife.
I don't remember.
Oh.
Of when I was in kindergarten?
Yeah, I mean, I'm shocked to hear that this would go on.
It happens still.
Of course, bullying.
Oh, well, yes.
Bullying is huge. Anyway, so then I just sort of... So then I noticed that I would watch movies. I sort of disappeared into books and movies as a child. Mm. And I would watch a movie, and then I would want to do whatever it is that lead character didn't. Like, I watched Nadia Comaneci, the film, and then I wanted to be a gymnast. And so then I was a gymnast for, like, 8 years. And then I watched that film about Richard Dreyfuss, the piano audition or
Mr.
something.
Mr. Holland's Opus?
No, the one he did early in his career that he played classical piano. It's some, I forget what it's called.
Oh. What is that?
Anyway, so then I wanted to play piano. So then I played piano for 9 years. And then I watched some B-movie version of Phantom of the Opera. So then I wanted to sing opera. So then I went.
And then you wore a mask covering your eye.
I wore
for the
a mask
rest
covering
of your
my
life.
Eye. No. So then I went. I started taking classical singing. So at 14, I was singing, like, starting to learn classical voice. And then I didn't really want to be an opera singer because I like to eat fried chicken late at night.
I don't know. I didn't know those things were separate.
Well, there's such a very strict lifestyle.
It is. I just thought that fried chicken was one of the parts that was restrained.
And spicy foods. Anyways, so then I...
Because of, like, acid reflux and stuff? Oh.
So then
because opera singers you think of as not necessarily being tiny, although that's changed.
No, my favorite opera singer right now is Nathalie Dessay. She's fantastic. She's, like, the Meryl Streep on stage. Opera. She's amazing.
Well, it's not that. You just think, well, it's not like Hollywood. You don't need to be, like, a supermodel, be an opera singer. You just need to be able to sing.
Yeah.
Know? Right.
So it's like,
So then I got into the Tisch School of the Arts at NYU. With the Cap 21, the same musical theater studio as Lady Gaga.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that was it.
So you just sort of eventually focused in on acting.
Well, this is the thing. I went there. A lot of the other students that went there knew what summer stock was, had been working professionally since they were a child, you know, or whatever. I didn't. I just auditioned and worked my butt off and then got in. And I remember having a meeting with one of the directors and I was like, why am I here? They're like, because you're raw. You're raw. We can shape you. And because you're talented. And so I was like, okay. So that's where I'm coming from.
That's the thing I always harp on is when you're a kid, the one thing that it's like, especially in acting, it's like you have to avoid becoming like Disney-fied.
Yeah.
Because Disney, it's like what they'll do is like pick, it's like a child actor who has like a modicum of talent. They'll pick them up and they'll take them to their re-education camps and they'll train them to smile constantly and to like become a sort of shell of a being. And it's like, you have to avoid that at all costs.
Yeah.
Because the moment you turn 16, all that training will turn into horrible alcoholism.
Or bad habits.
Well, yeah, it's like they just teach, it's like horrible acting habits.
Yeah. But conservatory, I mean, when I say to you, Laurie, that like that was the hardest I've ever worked, come Friday in the hallways, we were all crying during lunchtime. All of us. But it was the best rigorous, like,
from
training, conservatory, crying, brainwashing, just breaking you down.
Wow.
It's the best training I've ever had there.
But I mean, like, because it was the end of the week and you were tired, or because
you're
the
emotionally and physically exhausted. Okay. You know, you're in your teenage, early 20 years, and you're changing, and you're in New York City, and you're on your own, and you're doing Hamlet. And you're supposed, and at that school, you're supposed to do Hamlet. The best any possible actor could do Hamlet.
Wow.
You know, it's like that. You're doing material from Hamlet, rather. I've never played Hamlet, actually.
So, wow.
So it's rigorous and competitive, and
it's fantastic. All those things. Yeah, the program is there is really, really progressed.
All right, really cool. Progressed. I think we're gonna take a short break. We're going to try and play, what was it, the minute of your the musical?
There are two snippets from the musical that I wrote.
All right, we're gonna see if we can get this.
Which we'll talk about.
Okay, we're gonna try and get this. I don't know. Software is annoying as all hell. As again, I'm breaking the fourth wall here, giving you a view into our studio operations. But yeah, we're gonna try that. If not, we're gonna move on. Gonna hear more about it from, you know, these two.
We want to hear Anne Hughes' stand up. And
yes.
No. Oh God.
We couldn't get your stand up to go on. So you're gonna have to do that for us. Sorry.
Okay, no pressure whatsoever.
None. All right. So we're gonna be back in a moment.
I'm still wrapped in my blankie.
You have that.
Am I naive or just a fool? Is love enough to justify breaking all the rules? Well, I won't know.
Hi, Mommy. What are you doing?
Making stuffed cabbage.
Stop stuffing the cabbage. I have news.
Oh, Gott in Himmel, what happened?
I'm pregnant.
I'm gonna be a grandma!
Oi.
Suddenly things do rhyme. Thank you to 219.
Transistor.
It worked. The file worked.
Yay.
So
the
that's
video?
A victory for us.
The video?
Not
part?
The video. Oh. The, your musical. So, yes.
Wait, so Anne is having a Coke?
I'm having a Pepsi right now, which I don't remember the last time I ever drank Pepsi.
All right.
But she told me something.
I don't want to get sued by anybody or corporations, but all I'm saying is that preferably if you can drink Mexican Coke or Coke that's been bottled in Mexico.
Why is that?
Because it has real raw cane sugar, which your body recognizes and will immediately burn.
Not, like, gross
as opposed
syrup.
To corn syrup, which your body's like, I don't know what this is. and then you have to, you know.
But it's regular Coke with the Coke label?
But with the bottle.
Oh.
The bottle kind, like the traditional bottle.
Health advice for the day.
From someone who eats fried chicken.
Weird fact, I am probably like one of the only human beings that does not like Coke or Pepsi. Like, I just cannot stand cola. I really can't.
Diet stuff too?
Yeah, I just can't stand it.
I don't mean to go back on the subject, but it's like, I don't know.
Diet is fake sugar. That's not even good for you.
I never got how Coke became the most popular thing in the world.
Why are you drinking diet?
I try not to now. I'm trying not to.
Okay, whatever. Let's not get drawn into a conversation about Coke. Let's talk about you, the guests.
Showbiz.
You wanted to talk about how you two met up.
Okay, so I have never done stand-up comedy before until I got to Los Angeles and I was like, I need to get on stage. I took a course with Leslie Kahn, who's a well-known acting teacher. She's fantastic. And she was like, I'm going to do a Leslie Kahn impression. You're really funny. Maybe you should do some stand-up and make some money. That is literally
Leslie Kahn?
That's how she talks.
Really?
Yeah. So if she's saying that to you, you do it. So then I was like,
Very earnest.
That's funny.
And then my roommate at the time took a class with Judy Carter. And she's like, you should take it. Judy Carter's going to retire soon from teaching this class. You should take it. So I took it and never was in class with you, though, Lori. Never saw you in class. Mm-mm. You took...
A different day
or whatever. And then Ellen Snortland, who also took the class, was partnering and working with you.
She
and
was
then
in my class, yeah.
She told me to get in contact with you. And then the night when we did the show at the Improv... I'm sorry, I'm trying not to burp out loud, but this Pepsi is getting to me.
Hey, you think that's bad? Try
so
Monster.
I'm trying to hold it. That's why there's a pause when I speak. Damn it. I saw your show, and then you saw mine.
Did you see me do stand-up?
Yeah, we were all at the Improv together that night.
Because our show, we were on the same night.
On the same night. That was an awesome night.
It was an awesome night. And
such a rush.
I was completely blown away by two people, and Anne was one of them. Yeah, and I was like, I want to know her.
Yeah, I just made
she's
a bunch
brilliant.
Of cheap Asian jokes. That's all I did. Can't take credit.
No,
for
she's
it.
Really, really talented.
Stick and with what you know.
And a beautifully talented actress, too, because I saw her recently in a reading of a play at a theater company that then I asked Anne if she was interested in coming to audition for the theater company that I'm a member of.
Yes.
And she did, and now she's in my theater company.
And now I'm
so
in
happy.
Which is called The Road.
The Road Theater. Let's
plug it. Would you like to talk a little bit about your theater company?
Well, it's not my theater company, but I'm a
member. It's not mine either.
It's called The Road. Members. It's a theater company of about 120 people located in North Hollywood in the NoHo Arts District on Lancashire.
It's in, I just want to add one thing about where it is. It's in a really spectacular building. It's one of the things that I think is so special about it. It's in the historic Lancashire Arts Center, which I understand, I think it used to be like a water and power building.
What?
Did you know that?
All the best buildings are old, like water and power and Technicolor buildings.
I think it was. And now the downstairs has these ginormous ceilings, and it's an art gallery. But do you know that the art is only for, I think, union set people and union people who want to do their like regular art? But anyway, it's a art gallery downstairs and the theater's upstairs. So I just wanted to add that.
And the art's not bad. There's a couple pieces that I actually wanted to buy.
Oh no, it's terrible. Yeah. Why would they let this art be here?
Oh, yeah. No, it's good. It's good. So Lori actually called me out of the blue and was like, "So I've got this musical that I've written and I just, as a backup, I would love for you to come in and read for this part."
Oh, that's right.
For the role of Chin.
Yeah.
Like on your face.
what happened was I've been workshopping this musical forever. And
that's how you get it done.
Ever, forever. I wrote it for myself and now I'm too old to play myself. But anyway, so when I met Anne Hugh, I was like, oh my God, she's perfect for my show, for my piece. But there's an actress who has done a million free readings, who I love, who I also love, and is also a friend. And I've known her, you know.
She's fantastic.
For a long time, and she's been doing readings and readings. So, you know. But I so wanted to know Anne anyway, so I had her come in and read anyway, because you just never know, you know, what happens in life.
And I got to sing.
And we were completely blown away. By her acting and her singing and her comedy. And then later I thought, well, how do I keep her in my life? How do I get Anne around? And then I said, why don't you come audition for the company?
Yes. She's very possessive.
I noticed.
So I auditioned for the company and I did a dramatic comedic monologue for Sam Anderson, who is
the everyman
on TV.
I know the name, but
and
I'm
you would
terrible
totally
at names.
Know his face. He was...
Yeah.
He was in on Lost. He played Bernie.
I love Lost, so yeah, I know who he is.
He was one of the regular guys.
And then,
on
like
Lost.
Every once in a while, I'll turn on a movie, and there he is. Like, what was the Tom Hanks hugely famous movie? No, the guy who's a little
what
off.
Forrest Gump.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, he's in that. Then I saw a movie the other. Anyway, he works all the time.
But. Yeah. So and then I just sort of joined. And one of the reasons why we're here today is to talk about the Lancashire Block Party, which is a fundraiser for the Road Theatre Company, which is happening tomorrow. It's three stage readings of three plays that were chosen from our Best of the Fest Summer Festival, which they did, I guess, in August?
Mm-hmm.
In August. So they took the three top ones, and they're doing more other stage readings, repeat performances of that. And we're in sort of conjunction with the Jet Studios, which is an art photography studio, I think.
They also, the theater is done there. A friend of mine did a solo piece there, yeah.
And the Antaeus Theater Company. It's a whole block party for that whole area. There's food trucks, there's Tequila Avion, is, sorry, I don't want to mispronounce it. They've donated product. They sponsored the party.
Tequila?
Yeah, tequila. Oh. I've created a new drink called Sex on the Road.
Oh,
an interesting beverage.
I'm not going to tell you the actual ingredients.
Why? You
because
can't?
Because it's secret.
I won't drink it.
Why not?
Because I don't drink.
Really?
Yeah.
If the White House can release this brew, then so can you. Come on. Be a sticker.
How cool. Obama's
so
the
great.
Coolest
tequila
president
on the road.
To brew his own beer. Has any other president
ever
done that?
He brews his own beer?
Well, the White House brews it.
He has his own, well, the White House has its own like special brew.
I didn't know that.
It's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. That's wild.
I know.
Hey.
I know.
It's cool enough.
So that's part of it. And the play that I'm doing is called Cooperstown.
Great
play. Brian Golden, it's a really great play. We're hoping to be able maybe to do it in a main
on
stage
main
production
stage, sure.
There, yeah. Directed by Daryl Johnson, who I absolutely, utterly adore.
Me too.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And just a great cast. Yeah.
So cool. So just a quick recap, events that are happening in the future. Just a quick recap so that
Language and Block Party this Saturday, tomorrow, starts at 5 o'clock. Three stage readings, 5, I think 7:30, and then 10.
Well, I think that the whole thing starts at 4, actually.
With doesn't all it? Three.
All three companies.
Okay.
North Hollywood companies.
Yeah, and Taya says live music.
And, you know, North Hollywood is really, I don't know if you guys get there ever, but it is so... It's gentrifying as we speak. It's really burgeoning. Like it's, I mean, when I moved here 14, I'm lying, years ago, it was nothing. There was nothing. It was really, really bare. And there's tons of restaurants and places to live and lofts and theaters. It's really coming
so
up.
So tomorrow?
Anyway, so it's there, yeah.
Lancashire Block Party, 4 o'clock.
If be there.
You know, be there if you're listening to this. You know, listening to this from the future, you missed out. Also, know who was cool.
And at 5 o'clock, my friend Rena Strober, who's a beautiful singer, is doing a Broadway sing-along at the Block Party.
Fun.
Outside, and I may sing a tune.
Nice.
FYI.
I'll be acting my dramatic acting chops off
in next Cooperstown, door. Cooperstown, the great play.
Yeah, the character description when they handed me the play was... I just forgot my character's name. Hold on 1 second. I'm sorry.
Well, she was that guy's wife.
I think it's Grace.
That guy.
Grace. It was Grace? Yeah, because
Oh Jesus.
You know that guy.
But the point is, she's described as the loneliest woman in America.
America.
That was her character breakdown. And so we had this hilarious rehearsal the other night where all the actors, you know, we've been sort of like sunken with this sort of. Not depressing, it's very uplifting, but it's heavy and it's serious drama, and we all needed a release, so we all did musical versions of our characters' dialogue.
You did?
Yes. And I got on stage in the rehearsal, and I was like, I don't understand why I don't have a man. Like, that would be Grace's song.
Did everyone do it?
We were just laughing.
Oh, that's so
funny. I think at one point in rehearsal, I was crawling on the floor laughing because I couldn't make it to the chair.
I don't know. With like Loneliest Woman in America, I think it'd be more like a blues thing. You know?
I know.
Right.
I know. City of Angels.
All right. Cool.
I don't know. Oh, by the way.
It's spiraling out of my control.
One thing about the Road Theater that I will just throw in is that we mentioned one artistic director. One is Sam Anderson and the other one is Taylor Gilbert. Just FYI.
Yes, Taylor Gilbert actually, who is starring.
The founding artistic director.
Founding artistic director. And she's starring in the Road's next main stage production, which is The Detective's Wife.
Which is a solo play.
One character play.
Is it Keith Huff?
I don't know.
I think it's. I hope I'm right. Can you access Facebook?
It's directed by Mark St. Amant.
Yeah.
Right? All right.
I think it's Keith.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've heard about how you got into the arts, you know, you're growing up. Very interesting stories about kindergarten. 511 Kinderheim. And she planned for creating the perfect chant. Yes. I'd like to hear more about how you got into the arts, because I don't know, you haven't talked as much about that.
It's so crazy. I have this line on my website that I was born in a trunk, and I've been trying to pick the lock ever since and get the hell out. But I'm an artist, you know?
That's awesome. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, I just wrote that to be funny. It's not that I wouldn't want to be an artist. I'm one of those ones, like, if I... Do you know how you can't not?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm one of those. I can't not do it. That's my blood. That's my thing. That's how I breathe. But I do come from a family of artists, of performers. My dad was an actor. My mom was a musician. She played stand-up bass in the symphony and in smoky jazz clubs in Manhattan.
Best kind.
And then my sister... is a choreographer. She's more of a red cat. Like, she's a modern dancer. She lived in Soho, you know. She's in New York. She has a company in New York, Risa Jarislow and Dancers. They're postmodern. And then my cousin is an actress. She's kind of known.
Who is she?
Jessica Walters. She's the mom in Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah.
She says she patterned that character after my mother. Because, oh. Yeah, my mother's really funny. And then, and she's married to Ron Liebman, who's also an actor you probably know. He won a Tony for Angels in America. I love him. I love her. And my aunt, Ruth Jarislow, was an actress. And my dad, Jerry Jarrett, was an actor. But anyway, oh, and then musicians.
So it's like
all
you
over.
Have a very significant, like,
yeah,
family.
Yeah, but here's
background.
The weird part. Yeah. Very significant. And then my uncle was a famous bass player. He's Jessica's dad. David Walter was my mother's brother. He was the head of the bass department at Manhattan School of Music and Juilliard. And my other cousin, Richard, is the head of the screenwriting program at UCLA, the master screenwriting program. You know, even when I'm saying this about all of them, like, it sounds kind of impressive.
It's very impressive.
I know, but can you imagine growing up in that?
I would have loved it.
No.
Why? It's like, you're saturated in the arts and music and singing.
Well, the
is it like a shadow thing or is it a rebel thing or okay, shadow?
That's a lot to what's the word? It's a lot to have
live
to,
up to.
Yeah, aww. Absolutely. Yeah. And then also. Wait, there was something else I was going to say. I can't remember.
Well, everyone in my family is like a teacher, or a lawyer, a doctor, a dentist, an eye doctor, or works for the government.
That's great. Works for the government, really?
My brother does. Oops, sorry.
Oh, really? Man.
Are you? Why aren't you allowed to say that?
Because he does secret stuff. Oh, whoa, really? Whoops, sorry.
Secret stuff. Is that is he in the Department of Secret Stuff?
No.
It's not Secret
no,
Service.
No, I don't really
it's
have a brother.
Stuff.
What are you talking about?
Not
he actually teaches salsa, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Is
okay,
that the
I
secret
love
stuff?
That.
He's an Asian guy that teaches salsa.
That's so funny.
He's great
secret
at
salsa
it.
Stuff.
Yes.
Nice.
That's so great. I feel like a lot of actors, for some reason, have teacher parents. Why
my
is
mother,
that?
My mother is a speech patholo- my, I come
oh,
from
a speech pathologist.
I come from such great stock, you know. My dad's side of the family goes back to the Ming Dynasty. I don't want. Wait, are we? I don't want to pull away from. Your
no,
time.
I'll get back to me.
Okay.
Don't worry.
Because my father's side,
we're
still
going back to the Ming Dynasty
my father-
here. We're reaching a bit.
Really far. There was no kindergarten in the Ming Dynasty. No, but that's my dad's side of the family. Sort of the horsemen that sort of fought, you know, up there. I don't want to get into it. Anyways. The famous horsemen of the Ming Dynasty.
Really?
Yeah.
You're related to them?
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
It goes to my dad's side of the family. And my mother was an actress. She did radio shows in Taiwan and stuff.
Oh,
she
really?
Modeled a little bit, yeah. Oh.
At the same time? Was the Ming Dynasty?
Well, that was kind of, that was way back.
Yeah. I'm just thinking it's like,
it's
okay.
Hilarious, right? No, my dad wasn't an actual horseman of the Ming Dynasty, but his ancestors, my ancestors.
That would
were.
Be great, because whenever someone says, my dad could beat up your dad, you would always be able to win that argument. My dad has a horse and a lance. I automatically win.
Yeah, it was funny when we were kids and my dad would show up in PTA meetings in armor. I'm kidding, he didn't really.
Okay, so you come from an interesting background.
Very.
I gather.
Thank you. I have a Jewish grandmother, though. So there's
shut
some Jew
up.
In me.
I knew there was Jew
I
in
knew.
You.
I know there's Jew in me.
But there's something about Jews and Asians that I always feel some
we
kind
eat
of
the
connection.
Same food.
Is it the food?
Really? Is that how it is?
We or is it our food. Passionate feelings about food?
Well, Malcolm Gladwell wrote a book, Outliers, that's about certain cultures that...
Oh, really?
Well, it's about the story of success, but it's also about certain cultures whose behavior are just conducive to success, and that the Jewish and the Asian cultures have behaviors in their culture that are conducive to success.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Or, you know...
What's the name of the book?
Outliers. Oh. Yeah. It's kind of fantastic. It's heady. It's very dense. So when my parents settled in Salisbury, Maryland, and my father was starting up his restaurants, my mother was doing her speech pathology... I'm very proud of my parents. There was a couple, Herbert and Helen Brent, who sort of like just felt kindred spirits to my parents and sort of took them on. And you know, we were really poor growing up. Really poor growing up when I was a kid.
Really?
And yeah.
Before the restaurants?
Yeah, it was hard. My father was a waiter at first, even though he had a sociology degree. He got a full scholarship to Southern Illinois University and a sociology degree, and then he decided he wanted to go into restaurants.
Oh, wow.
My mother got a speech pathology degree. Anyway, so Grandma Helen basically, like, just took care of us while they worked. And so I was sort of raised, I would say, culturally Jewish.
Oh.
not necessarily religiously Jewish.
Right, right. Well, me too,
yeah, actually.
That's the one thing that kills me about the whole Jewish culture is there is this sort of separation between the cultural aspect and the religious aspect. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, that's the one thing that always kills. It's like, I don't know. It's just, it's such a clear divider almost.
Which you feel is more distinctive than other
cultures? I always thought, well, yeah. It's like, I always feel like, It's almost like a sober culture almost, where it's like self-aware of like its past religious history, and it's very
aware of its identity.
Exactly.
It's very aware of its identity.
A lot more than, because when you think of like, you know, when you think of like the U.S. culture, it's like, it's very self-aggrandizing, you know, it's very like, you know,
super patriotic.
Yeah, it's very focused on like being outstanding and amazing and the best and saving everyone but when you go to like Jewish culture, it's a lot more, it's almost
humble.
It's a lot more humble, it's a lot more laid back. It's like they're more willing to make jokes about themselves.
Although people think Jews are arrogant.
Yeah. It's a self-deprecating arrogance.
Right. Well,
we're a celebration in a self-deprecating way, maybe. I know Asians tend to be self-deprecating sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
There's like that self-deprecating aspect to it.
Yeah. Oh, I know, I got that.
Yeah.
In spades.
I got rid of mine. Mm. My self-deprecating.
On purpose?
Yeah.
Oh, did you make a conscious effort?
I had an amazing therapist in New York.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, me too, but I didn't get rid of it.
You should send me his number. Okay. We've been going on for a good 20 minutes. I think we're going to take another break. We're going to try and get a bit more track how you got into acting.
Oh, yeah,
we're going to sort of try and wrap this up.
No, let's talk about the baby project next when we get back.
Oh, okay, yeah. Sure.
And play the song.
You know, whatever you want
to
talk about.
No loss of things to talk about here.
Never. All right, so we'll be back in a couple minutes.
Should we say bye?
No, because we're going to be back.
Okay, we'll be right back.
This is fun. I could do this all day.
Uh-huh.
Relax a fringle, slacken ties and I- Accidentally I charm you and tell you of the boys I hate, all the girls I hate, all the words I hate, all the clothes I hate. Oh, I'll never be anything I hate. You smile, mention something that you like. I made it and what I made is unclear now. But his deference is and his laughter is. My words and smile are so easy now. Yes, it's easy now. Yes, it's easy now. Academic factory will find me in the matinee. Dark of the matinee, it's better in the matinee. The dark of the matinee will find me and follow me through corridors, refectories, and files. You must follow me. This academic factory will find me in the matinee. The dark of the matinee, better in the matinee. The dark of the matinee is mine.
And we're back. Sorry for that short delay. So we're talking. Jesus, we're talking about Ming Dynasty and Lori and acting and.
And I said, "There's something I want to say, but I forgot what it was, and I just remembered."
Right.
And what it was that you one would think that if you grew up among artists, that you would be just immersed in it. Which I don't know that I really was necessarily immersed in it, nor would I say it was encouraged, which you would think is really weird, except that now that I'm an adult,
mm-hmm.
I don't wish being an actor on anybody.
It's kind of like a curse in its own way.
Yeah, a little bit. And I mean, it can be a challenging life being an artist, for
it's
sure.
It's a challenging lifestyle, but if someone has that fire.
Of course. And I wouldn't never discourage it, you know.
It's just that you have to really want to do it for
you have its to own have sake. To do it. You have to need to do it. You have to. So, no, of course I wouldn't discourage it. And I say it sort of lightheartedly, you know, half kidding and half not. It's just that you want your kids to be happy and have a good life and not struggle so much, you know. So I don't know if that's why, but for some reason, like I teach a lot and I do a lot of musical theater with little kids, both creating it, writing stuff with them, or just directing classical like Disney musicals. your favorite.
No, hey, I like some Disney musicals. Hunchback of Notre Dame's pretty good.
Did you direct Mulan?
No.
Can I play Mulan when you direct Mulan?
Okay, for sure.
Okay.
You can play Mulan every day.
But what I was thinking, what
it's
I
not
think
like
about,
I have a choice.
About when I see, what did you
There's
say?
No other character
in Mulan for you.
There's no other Asian character in the entire world of Disney other than Mulan.
Well, they need to have at least way it works is they need one. They just need one. And they move on back
I
to
cast
back
Asians
to doing
all
white people folktales.
But like you could pretend to be Beauty and the Beast and Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty and Ariel. I can kind of only pretend to be Mulan.
I can do Ursula. I could do Ursula pretty well.
Maybe Pocahontas.
That's terrible.
I know.
Yeah.
I just thought of a new stand-up joke, actually.
Can you
tell us?
Do you
want to
try
on.
It out on yeah, us, please?
Because well,
you've been holding out on your stand-up.
I feel like you know. There's clearly the distribution of equal representation of people in society in movies is slowly balancing out, slowly, very slowly. But you know, it's evolving, and I feel like you know, whenever I see a cute, you know, white couple, I'm like, oh my god, they're so Brangelina, they're so cute. But then when you go out and you see like cute like Indian couples or Asian couples, like what are you gonna say? Oh my god, that's so Slumdog Millionaire, they're so cute. You can't say that. You can't say that's so Slumdog Millionaire. That's like not really the point, right? Or you can't say, oh my god, they're so Farewell My Concubine, I love them together.
Well, that's
like you can't say that.
So meaning where are
it's the same
levels,
problem.
Yeah?
It's the problem is whenever it's like that's the thing that kills me is whenever they do a story that's not about, you know, like a, you know, attractive white people. It's always a story about the trials of tribulations about not being a white person. You know, there's never a story
true.
Where it's just mm-hmm. I just it's like it's never a story. It's like I just happen to be
right.
Indian or
right.
I just happen to be gay. It has to be
well, you know,
I'm gay and these are all the problems. It's like you know, I'm fine with those stories. Those
yeah,
stories are good. It's
son.
Just like can you have one where it's like. It's not their soul-defining trait.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Maybe
right.
they do other things, you know?
Right.
It's so interesting that you're saying that because the musical that I wrote, I've been having to write blurbs about it now and how do you pitch it and how do you tell people what it is and what's the one-line version about what it is and what's the theme and blah, blah, blah. And what I noticed, because there's so much stuff about same-sex marriage right now, in none of the pitches does it ever say that the lead character is actually in the musical with a woman. Because it's not about that. It's not a coming out story. Mm-hmm. It's not about, it has pretty much nothing to do with her being gay. Yeah. Or bi, whatever. But anyway,
it
makes me happy that you said that because it's like, yeah, that's cool.
That's just one of the things. It's just like one of those little pet peeves, you know? It's like the stereotype where in every Hollywood movie there needs to be a funny black stereotype guy.
Yeah.
And it's always like the funny black stereotype
guy. But I mean,
guy.
I don't want to disrespect stereotypes because there are people that authentically exist
I know,
with those
yeah.
behaviors. So that mm-hmm. that's worthy of representing. But mm-hmm. at the same time, there's also
well, it's
just
like,
the humanity of someone.
No, no, yeah. It's like, I'm not saying that at all. I'm not
right,
saying
right,
that it's
right,
like those people don't exist. It's just like, if movies represented all of culture, then it would be like there would only be one person who wasn't that stereotype with how it's
right.
how it's in everything. It's
why can't different. I play a hooker that gets bought by Richard Gere and gets to shop on Rodeo Drive? I would
be totally
and
good.
I would be a lot cheaper than $3,000 for the week, I'll tell you that right now. You're not a bargain.
I'm just kidding. That's terrible.
How did you
more than $5, but definitely less than $3,000.
Are we going to figure out how you got in acting or are we going to keep talking about hookers?
Wait, let's play
this is supposed
let's,
to be Youth Arts Underground. We're talking about hookers.
It's not even a good story.
Why don't you don't want to tell it?
No, there's not even that much of a story. Let me, I even have to think about it. Because it feels so, I mean, after talking about my background, you'd think, well, of course. But on the other hand, consciously, it was not something I was thinking about growing up. That's what I was going to say about little kids today, and I think this has to do with technology. Like, the kids that I direct are so savvy and so smart and know entertainment and know movies and know everything.
Well,
I didn't.
Well, the thing is now is
I
that if you
anything.
Want to, it's like, it
Bing.
Used to be, yeah.
Click of a button, of
well,
course.
Yeah. It used to be like you want to figure out, okay, I want to know every single you know, horror movie made by Universal
yeah.
in their entire, you know, in its entire existence. For,
right.
Well, that's all of them.
But I didn't have that at all. I was not a kid
yeah.
who sat around dreaming about being an actor. Not at all. And in fact, I remember like listening to a show album when I was, I don't know, I just had gone into the business, I guess. But later, like I did not grow up doing that. But anyway, how did I get into it? It was very last minute. It was like after high school, I thought, oh, I should go to college. Where should I go? And then randomly, I went to Cleveland, Ohio, to a school that's good in engineering.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah.
I have interesting stories about Cleveland, Ohio.
You
but
do?
That's, yeah, but that, this is
anyway,
your
that
interview,
was so. Pretty much of a disaster. And then And I just went there because I had an English teacher I liked. Okay, and she said, go there. There's a lot of
theater
there.
I have to ask because you went to Ohio. Mm-hmm. Was there any Faygo?
Any what?
Faygo. The soda. Faygo.
Oh, I don't remember.
I need to ask.
I've never even heard of it.
One thing about, okay, anybody who's listening, go to Ohio. Faygo soda. Uh-huh. 50 cents a can. And it's like a, yeah. And it's.
The best.
Google it. Just go Google it.
What does it taste like?
It tastes like, you know how there's grape, there's like grape juice and then there's grape drink?
Yes.
This is grape drink soda.
Oh my God.
It's not bad. It's just the.
It's all grape though? There's no other flavors?
No, it's not. There's tons of flavors. But it's like their cheap soda. It's like the cheapest. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Just
no.
Google it. It's insane. It's an obsession of mine.
Is it made with corn syrup?
Continue.
So then, anyway, I. All of a sudden, I went to college for 1 year. They were supposed to have a good theater department. Maybe they did. I don't remember. And then I went, yeah, I want to be an actor. I moved back to New York. I went to Neighborhood Playhouse, and I got in a show, which was the flukiest thing. I was 19 years old and ill-prepared. Not prepared for the life of it. Not prepared, both in terms of... skill and technique and stuff like that, and just the lifestyle. And I got into the show Grease. I was 19 or 20, I think.
Who did you play in Grease?
First, I understudied six people. So I played Rizzo a lot. I played everybody a lot. I even played, okay, this is really weird. 20 years old, I played the old teacher. Hello, on Broadway. Isn't that strange?
What was your costume?
I guess I was a character actress when I was five, yeah. You know? And then a baggy dress.
A baggy dress? Was your costume?
For the teacher, yeah.
Did you have a wig and glasses?
I don't remember. Yeah, I think I had a wig. Yeah, definitely a wig. I was 20. Yeah. Anyway, and I toured with it. It was the third national tour with Peter Gallagher.
Nice.
Yeah, he's a doll. He's a wonderful human being. I can't, and other people that you probably know, I can't even think right now. But anyway, I toured with it for about a year and a half and then went into the New York company, and I did that show for about 5 years, and that was my entrance into showbiz. And while I was in New York for those 5 years, I studied, and then I did my version of Tisch, which was just private. I mean, I was doing a show at night, so I had money for classes, and I just studied. Yeah, a lot.
So it's like just sort of...
Different ways.
Just sort of gravitated into it.
Yeah, I was trying not to get beat up, so I became an actor. Let's play the Baby Project music, can we?
Okay. Let's see.
From Laurie's show that the Road Theater Company is producing on their main stage next year.
I don't know if we...
Played it already?
No, I don't think I put that on the playlist. It was in a folder. I saw it, but I didn't put it on the playlist.
Oh.
What we can do is after this,
after the next break, or
okay, what I can do, because here's
the problem.
Should we
take a break now?
We're gonna take a break. What I can do, all right, is after the broadcast, I can switch out the playlists and I can play through that if you want, because I don't want to risk this crashing. I know this is wonderful radio, isn't it? I don't want the software to crash.
I'm learning so many new things here.
You learn many things inside the halls of radio.
It's so interesting.
It's the next great frontier in the technological medium.
I want to know more about you guys.
Yeah.
But I'm supposed to be interviewing you.
Oh, right. Yeah. We need to talk about ourselves more.
We're going to take a short break.
Okay.
I think what we're going to do is after this all done, I'm going to switch out the playlists and we're going to play through all that. So after the interview, there's going to be more stuff. That sound okay?
Did you hear that, everyone? That's what we're doing.
All right. I hope the people listening understand that, because I don't. All right, we'll be right back.
Times have changed, and we've often rewound the clock. Since the Puritans got a shock when they landed on Plymouth Rock. If today any shock they should try to stem, instead of landing on Plymouth Rock, Plymouth Rock would land on them. In olden days, a glimpse of stockings was looked down as something shocking. Now, heaven knows, anything goes. Good authors, too, who once knew better words, now only use four-letter words, writing prose. Anything goes. The world has gone mad today, and good's bad today, and black's white today, and day's night today, when most guys today that women prize today are just silly gigolos. So though I'm not a great romancer, I know that I'm bound to answer when you propose. Anything goes. Just silly gigolos. So though I'm not a great romancer, I know that I'm bound to answer when you propose. Anything goes. Anything
And we're back.
With Anne Hugh.
And Laurie Jarislow.
So.
That sounded so fakey. Like, I'm talking on the radio.
We have. So, yeah.
Yes.
You were talking about your project, which I'm sorry, I don't have
the musical. No, let's talk about your stand-up first. So, we were talking.
Yes, this is hilarious.
There were so many threads that we've, started and we've not quite finished. Anne and I met at the Improv doing stand-up, which was the result of a class that we both took.
Yes.
Yeah. But anyway, so I've only
done it 9 times because the difference between it's catatonic to me. It terrifies me so much.
Which is so bizarre because she's so good.
Well, because I prepare like nobody's business.
Like an actor. Me too.
I prepare like an actor. I write my jokes. I rehearse them. I work out the beats.
Very detailed.
Very detailed. Comedy
is. I've heard you on YouTube and you're good.
Oh, thanks. But comedians don't necessarily do it that way. Comedians go to open mics almost every night. And they work out their new material in front of people. And as an actor...
As opposed to writers, actors.
Right.
Well, I do it exactly always, like
in
Anne
front
does.
Of people is sort of weird to me.
Well, no, there are a ton of different ways of doing stuff. I mean, when you look at someone like... You have someone like Eddie Izzard, who's almost like... He's almost doing a new routine every time.
I love him. Yeah.
Just because he's so... He's just so, he's so out there. He's like, hey, how's it going? And then you have someone like, looking back, you have like George Carlin, where it's like everything is like...
I love him too.
Everything's refined down to like the finest tune. It's like it was like a perfect rehearsal.
Right.
So it's, it's like stand-up is like this incredibly diverse thing.
Do you use the audience much at all? Like, do you do stuff on the
sometimes,
spot?
Sometimes, if I feel comfortable, if I'm wearing my lucky outfit and I feel grounded.
What's your lucky outfit?
Well, I don't know that it's so lucky anymore, but it's this sort of black jumper tube top with a white belt. Looks kind of cute, I think.
Great things have happened when you've worn it?
Yes. I ran into Annette Bening and Warren Beatty at the Promenade once while I was wearing it in the elevator. I took the elevator with them.
I saw Annette Bening in a play. No, I'm dating myself. When she was like, I think it was the first thing she ever did in New York.
Really?
And I still remember her. She must have been 20 tops.
Wow. So what have you been doing recently in stand-up?
I haven't been doing it. I think I did a lot. Whenever Rebecca O'Brien calls me, usually I'll do one of her shows. I've done stuff at the Improv, Comedy Store.
M-Bar.
Elderberries is a nice open mic. And I have friends that I've seen them do stuff at Ice House. Steve Byrne, actually, who is of the Sullivan and Son. Steve in CBS show Sullivan and Son. He's a stand-up comedian. And he actually replaced one of the male leads in a incredibly dramatic off-Broadway play that I did in... when I was still in college, actually, about the Chinese Cultural Revolution. People don't know this about him. He's a fantastic dramatic actor. And he has been doing stand-up all these years and now has his own show on TBS. So, that to me is like a real... What? Sullivan and Son.
Oh.
Right. Yeah.
So
it's like a Cheers.
It's been a sort of, you know, you just take it when you can get it.
Because ultimately I enjoy doing it to sort of get on stage and put stuff out there and say what I want to say. But it takes an incredible amount of commitment. And then I've got obligations as an actress and with the company. So I'd like to spread it evenly. But
right.
I'll give you, yeah.
What will you give us?
Well, did you guys hear that Kim Kardashian wants to run for mayor of Glendale? Did you hear about that?
That's not for real.
No, it was for... She was like talking about how she wanted to run for mayor of Glendale.
Oh my gosh.
Do you know who else lives in Glendale besides Armenians?
Well,
Asians.
That's the end of me. you have any more projects before I go and hang myself?
Wait, that was a joke that I was getting to the cut off.
Yeah, oh, good. Sorry.
It's okay.
So I'm after Arnold Schwarzenegger, nothing's a joke on that level. Anybody can run for office.
I'm not going to get to my punchline. It's okay.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
You can start again.
No, it's not funny. Not funny. Anyway, my point is that, you know, Asians in Glendale, she wants to run for a mayor of Glendale. You don't want to know why there are no Asians that have a reality TV show?
Why?
Because we have integrity.
We're
not going to air our dirty laundry out there for the whole world to see.
Uh-huh.
You want to know why?
Why?
Because we're too busy dry cleaning everybody else's.
I feel like a murderer.
You did. You killed that joke. You burned an iron into the back of that joke like a could have been a crisp white shirt.
But we love you, Ryan.
No, I really need to hang myself.
No, stop it. We like you. You're great.
Okay. Do you want to talk about your project?
So I wrote a musical called The Baby Project with Fonda Feingold, who is a composer, a wonderful composer, and a woman named Noriko Oling, who was playing keyboard for me and doing demos and doing all kinds of things for years, started writing also. And now we brought her onto the creative team, and she and I are also writing music for the project. But it's a musical comedy. It started out as a solo play that I had written kind of for myself to do. It was autobiographical, and that was, like I said, a long time ago. And then quickly it turned into a musical, and then I just wanted the characters that I was playing to just be there, and I didn't want to stand on stage all night like a solo show and flip my head back and forth.
Neck trauma.
No, people just encouraged me, and they said, those characters are delightful. We want to see more of them. Anyway, so I finally, it was painful deciding, but I ended up deciding, okay, I'm going to make it a real thing. So it's been progressing, and I've had readings in New York and readings in Provincetown and readings in LA. And then, you know, it's the Baby Project. It's really gone through so many different phases because it's been a while. Now, the Road Theater that Anne and I are both company members in is producing it. And last year they won an NEA grant on behalf of my project, which is beyond exciting and an honor. And we're slated to go up in January. It's a 5-person show, all women, who play lots of roles, like
right.
The women play men. And It's about, do you want to hear what it's about?
It's hilarious.
Just give us a brief synopsis.
I'm
going
to do my, now I'm having to pitch it everywhere. So I'm having to have this like
do it
might
together.
As well practice.
Right, let me practice. So it's about the new face of the American family. That's what one of the producers wrote about it. And I really like that because, you know, look at what's on TV now, The New Normal and Modern Family. It just ain't Leave It to Beaver anymore. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think it was ever Leave It to
Beaver.
Was
it ever? Yeah.
We just wished it was.
True. That's absolutely true. But so it's about a woman who's in her early 40s and she is trying to have a family first through the crazy world of medically assisted fertility and stuff, which is pretty funny. And then she moves to Los Angeles. She's a New Yorker. And I will just say that what ends up happening is nothing that she planned. And I think that one of the things that it's about is that you make plans, but then you have to just be open and that the thing that you want maybe is sitting right in front of you and you didn't know it.
Yeah, you want to make God laugh? Make a plan.
I just heard that.
Did you?
The other day somebody said that.
Are there any aliens in your show?
Uh-uh.
No.
Wait, what do you
mean? I don't know. I just felt like asking you that.
No aliens.
No aliens.
Uh-uh.
Which kind of alien?
Are there crazy Jewish ants.
Also known as aliens.
All right. So when is that? Is there any ETA?
Yeah,
on that?
And let me make one little pitch here. It's here's what else it's about. It takes place in the Los Angeles Unified School District. What? It's about HMOs. It's about acceptance. It's about tolerance. Okay.
Love and tolerance. Okay.
Love and tolerance.
It's about the real world, people.
It's about real.
Thank you.
It's about real and grit and real.
No, the real world.
Not the real world, the real world. Like the real world.
It's
real.
A lot. It's about foster care. There's a lot in it about foster care.
You should pitch it
adoption.
To Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt.
I've thought about it.
Wait, I know some people that know them. Oh, okay.
Okay.
You should say this.
Don't tell them all about the people who know Angelina. You have to keep that information private. Do you have an ETA when this is
January?
Okay, January
in NoHo at the Rode Theater. We don't have the dates yet.
Again, NoHo is really cool. Is the general just the show? All right.
Say yes ho to the NoHo.
So I think we're gonna have to wrap that up. It's been wonderful having you on the show.
Likewise.
Yes. Thank you.
Fun.
No end of amazing stories.
Riley.
It's always great. Thank
yes.
you.
And I'm Ann Hugh.
Lori Jarislow.
I'm going to play some songs from the Baby Project.
Great.
So stay tuned. All right? And that's it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was a blast.
All right.
We're going to go have fried chicken now.
See you later.